Okay, so welcome to Life Path Dialogues, and with my guest, filmer Kay Wanyama. I'm Carla Woody, and our topic tonight has to do with what is spiritual responsibility. And what I'm going to do is just kind of kick that off and create a framework, and then start talking with Phil about what that means from the Hopi tradition, because he's Hopi and he's from Shingopavi up on Second Mesa, even though, you know, you're living here in Prescott, in the local community. But so really about what is spiritual responsibility, and I want to talk about that in the framework of for anyone who has a calling of some sort, you know, a calling to service, particularly spiritual service. Some of us may have been born into it. I wasn't, but some people were, like Phil was, you know, from the Hopi tradition, and others just perhaps somehow get a calling to serve in whatever way that is. And so, you know, what does that mean between, because there's a kind of a pull, it seems, the passion to serve, and yet there are the everyday requirements of living and how all that unfolds and so forth. And for the last few years, I've been kind of toying with how to really describe that. You know, what are the words that you use to describe that? And one, you can say, well, responsibility or duty when you get that. But to me, both of those words have kind of a heavy connotation to them. And with the Maya people, they have, particularly up in the highlands of Chiapas, they do what they call carrying cargo. Isn't that an interesting term? I mean, because you think about cargo as almost like a burden or something. Mm-hmm. It's something that you're carrying around. But essentially, what they do up in some of the Highland Maya villages, and it's also similar down in Peru and elsewhere, I'm sure, you know, in Guatemala and places like that, is that they kind of trade off these responsibilities. It's not always one person doing it, although one person may hold a certain office for maybe a year or something like that, where they caretake the temple, so to speak, where the saint is kept, you know, or care for the vestments and things like that. But I also want to talk about this in terms of what happened for me personally. And in 2007, I founded Kenosis Spirit Keepers, which is the nonprofit extension of my organization, Kenosis. And essentially, I did that because I felt like I just wanted to be able to do more, you know, to give back. I had been going down to Peru for a long time, doing spiritual travel programs, engaging with the Quero and the Quechua communities down there. Had started going, you know, long time ago as well, into the Maya communities and so forth, and engaging with these healers and these spirit keepers that were so generous with their teachings and with their ceremonies and so forth. And it really kind of all came about and kicked into high gear when one time after a despacho ceremony down in Peru with the Quero spiritual leaders, I point blank asked them. I said, I'm now in a position perhaps where, you know, we want to be able to give back more, and what can we offer in return? And they looked at each other and, you know, kind of whispered, and then they said, help us build a school. And boy, that isn't what I thought I'd be doing, you know, but This was in the village of Cochimoco, and at 17,000 feet, they did not have a school. And so either their children didn't go, or they had to go and live in another village, or, you know, it was 3 hours away by foot and that kind of thing. And so, you know, I mean, of course I said yes. You know, and then reality kind of sunk in and so forth. But what we were also doing at that point and had continued to do that was to bring spirit keepers from the U.S., mostly Hopi spirit keepers, down to be with their relations, you know, and because it was their migration paths, right, up from South America, which I didn't even know at the time until after the fact, which is, I think, is kind of an interesting thing too. It's almost like destiny. And we had different projects in the different communities, you know, building bathrooms and things like that. Now, in 2007, when this all really kicked into high gear, you know, there was a lot of excitement about it. And there were a lot of funds available. People donated to these projects and our mission and so on. And a lot of sweat equity that went into that, I can tell you, because Kenosis Spirit Keepers is actually a volunteer-run organization. Okay, everybody that's involved in it does it as service. And then what happened, though, was that the economic downfall hit, and it was a very interesting thing that happened, is that people kind of holed up, didn't they? And I don't think that it was that interest fell away, but people kind of went internal, and the funds dried up and so forth. For me, it didn't mean that the mission was any less important. As a matter of fact, I probably worked even harder then to be able to continue doing what we had been doing and even growing that, because that's something that I truly believed in, about the preservation of these indigenous traditions that, for me, hold the core beliefs that hold the world together, you know. But after a while, it begins to take a toll, you know, when you're working for these things, and it just seems to get harder. It takes a toll on mind and body. And so what began to happen is that I would begin to get this internal dialogue that said, nobody cares. What are you doing? Why bother? You know? And the thing you need to understand is that that's not dialogue that I normally have internally. Okay? And what I've told people, because I work with people one-on-one and in small groups with doing transformative processes and so forth, so that when that kind of internal dialogue comes up, to me, it's always signaled kind of a breakthrough is getting ready to happen, because when those voices get the loudest, you know, because it's like the status quo wants to hold us back, right? So when those voices get the loudest, it signals a breakthrough. And here I was experiencing this just in an ongoing way. And then actually something happened last January, in January 2012, that really shifted things for me. And that was that I had a spiritual travel program in Chiapas, Mexico, with the Maya spiritual leaders and the healers and so forth. And there is a Maya church up in San Juan Chamula, that is outside San Cristobal de las Casas, that is just extraordinary. I've never been in a place like that. It's not a church in the way that in Western culture we think of a church. You know, you go inside, and there are no pews. You know, it's pine needles all over the floor. There are all these candles. the Maya curanderas and curanderos are there working with their people, doing ceremony in front of Catholic saints in these glass boxes that line the walls, you know? Except they have their own stories about these saints and how the saints came to the villages and, you know, and that kind of thing. So we had been there at the time of the festival of San Sebastian, when during these festivals, all of the saints are taken out of their glass cases, and there's a processional that they go out of the church and around the square, and thousands of people are there. It's truly the most extraordinary thing. And after all of the ceremony is over, for a period of time, the saints sit inside the church but outside of their glass cases. And there's more ceremony going on and so forth. I always take anyone who wants to go back up to the church after a couple of days, because just to be able to be there in that space, there's extraordinary energy inside. And just to be there in the space is a real gift. When I took a few people back this time, some of the saints were still sitting outside of their glass cases. So they were sitting like on a table, you know, and just sitting there. And when we went in, the cargo holders were there, and they were going through what they would go through to get them ready to be put away, so to speak, to be protected in the glass cases again. The saints wear layer upon layer of these garments, and so during these processionals, so they were removing some of them, putting them away in boxes and so forth. The women were sitting on the ground in groups, and they were chanting periodically, and then they would talk, and the men were there doing what they're doing, getting the saints ready. And Saint Martha and Saint Lucia were sitting there on the table, and I walked up behind the women who were sitting there chanting, and just stood there gazing. And it was the most remarkable thing, because I was looking at Saint Martha, and all of a sudden, it's like her eyes became alive, and she gazed right into my soul. It was the most extraordinary thing I've ever experienced. It was like there was some kind of transmission that happened. And while I was standing there, all of a sudden, one of the men motioned to one of the others, and he went over and he picked her up in his arms and began to walk over to the glass case which would be her place, where she would be housed, to put her back in the glass case. But before he did that, he paused and he danced with her. And that it just got me, like you just can't believe. And when I saw that, I thought, there is no way that this is a burden to this man. This is something that comes from the heart, you know? And that's really what spiritual responsibility is. I'm not sure that there's really a word for it. The thing that I came back to, that I come back to a lot, is in Peru with the Quero and the Quechua people. They talk about Aini, and I think probably you've heard me talk about that before. And you know, there isn't an exact translation, but the closest I can get is a sacred sense of reciprocity. You know, that the Mother Earth, the saints, whatever it is that that you're called to from your heart is that they're holding that space. And that reciprocity is what we give back to them. And so I just want to say a couple of other things, and then I'm gonna kind of ask Phil some questions and turn it over to him because he has so much to share. But I'll tell you, really, after all of that, I decided that that was a spiritual test that I had been going through, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
A spiritual test about, was I going to continue mm-hmm. to hold that space and to offer that service, even though, you know, it's a challenge mm-hmm. sometimes. As a matter of fact, most of the time. But this is what I really came to. And so this is what I've relearned, is that such ways of being are the invisible strands that hold the world together. It's possible to operate within a construct that is riddled with shortcomings and still hold pure intent. Intangible things that you value spiritually are worth the hard work. Strike a balance in all things. Touch just one person and it touches others. And ask for help. Some things take a community. You know, some things take a community. So Phil, thank you so much for being here with us. And what I want to invite you to talk about, you know, you and I met and kind of talked about, for, you know, the many things that you could offer folks. And perhaps you can talk to them a bit about how really, at least from an outsider's perspective, how complex the Hopi way of life is. And I know you live here locally in Prescott, and yet you're very traditional. And you go up to Shungopavi for the religious ceremonies and all of the responsibilities that you hold there. And so maybe you can just talk about, you know, the cycle of the religious festivities. How do you strike a balance in all of that?
Mm-hmm. First, thanks for letting me be here. And first, you know, the thing about it that I need to clarify first is that we Hopi are one of the only tribes that still live their lives according to the ceremonial calendar. So for us, spiritual responsibility, is it a burden? No, it's not. Is it kind of like a is it complicated? In a way, it is. Because we live our lives daily throughout the calendar year, doing ceremonies that are constant. It's constant. There's always something that needs to be done. And so for us, especially for people like me, the Hopi that live out here, because we live our lives according to the ceremonies, trying to live out here and do the things that we do out there, it's a little complicated, but if you can balance both of them, it works out. And what does that do for a person as far as spiritual responsibility? For me, and for the way that it's been taught to me, is that one of the last things she said just now about it takes a community to accomplish certain things. One of the things it does for me is that it gives me a chance, it gives me a sense of well-being. It gives me a sense of peace. And at the same time, one of the biggest things that this spiritual responsibility does for us is that you're paying your life back. That's what you're doing. That's mainly what you're doing. When I go out to the out home for kachina ceremonies or anything else, it's because, like, Mary Helen, by the way, is my other half. You know, she's my partner. And I've always tell her about the Hopi way, and I say, we need to go out home. I said, because I need to help, because this is how I'm paying my life back to them. You know, to whatever is out there, the forces that are out there, that's how I'm paying my life back. So that when I come back over here and live out here, then I know that I have paid my life back I can start doing what I need to do. And it gives me a sense of peace when I come back. So for me, spiritual responsibility is complicated, but at the same time, it's there's a reason for it, so we still do it. I left the reservation back in 1976 to go to join the military. And during that time, a lot of my spiritual responsibility to the Hopi was gone. You know, it wasn't gone, it was just put on the back burner. I was gone. I was doing the stuff that I needed to do out here. Then when I had family, the same thing, you know. There would be times that I would go out home to do things, but it wasn't enough. When the time came and when I got out of the military, I said, I need to go back. You know, I need to. The thing with me, though, is that because I've lived out here a lot, majority of my life, that I'm comfortable with it. So living here in Prescott, I do what I need to here because it's what I like to do. But when the time comes where I need to be out there, I make it a point. Now, there are times when I just can't do it. But do I say, oh, I got to drop everything here and go back there? There's times we have done it, but there's times when I can't, you know. A prime example was recently my kiva, what had been torn down to be rebuilt. It was falling apart. They finally finished the kiva after about 4 years, you know. So one of the things that comes with that is that you have to rename the kiva, the underground chamber. You stay in the kiva all night, staying awake. You're staying awake with the kiva, doing some songs, doing some ceremonies, and you're in there all night until the sun the next day. My family called me up and they said, Phil, you know, there's the kiva naming ceremony going on this weekend. Just thought I'd let you know, you know. And I said, wow, you know, so I really needed to be out there. But on the other hand, my son and his wife and kid were going to be in town, and I haven't seen my son that much, you know. So I kind of felt torn in between. I said, what do I do? What is the right thing to do, you know? And I had made it a point. I said, I got to go home, you know. But then the more I thought about it, I said, well, I need to talk to some of my relatives, you know. So I talked to one of my cousins, and I told him the situation. He said, you haven't seen your son in quite a bit, so that needs to be a priority for you. So don't worry about what's happening at home. They know that you would have been home, but, you know, you have other things that are also important. So, you know, do that what you need to do with your family, you know. So it felt good to be able to say, okay, I've made my decision. I'm going to stay here with my son and his family. And I was okay with it. Even though I didn't go out home for it, I was okay with it, you know. So that right there is a balance of how I had to take that responsibility there and just put it aside for now, you know, and still feel good about myself. Not this weekend, but the following weekend, my niece is getting married the Hopi way. And for the, again, like I was telling you earlier, women have a lot of say-so in our culture. So it's the women that initiates the marriage process. And so my niece had been telling me, said, Uncle, he said, you know, I'm planning on doing this and taking food to my future in-laws on this day. So I said, I'll be there for you. So they called me up, remind me, you know, that, you know, not on August, I mean, October, April 5th, I think it's 5th or 6th, said, you know, we're going to be taking food to my future in-laws. So I'll be out there. Now, that's a spiritual responsibility also. And that involves the whole community. For a marriage to be very successful, the community has to come together. So when my niece said, I'm going to take food to claim my husband, the village knows about it. It's talked about. And the thing that comes with that is a sense of peace, a sense of family, a sense of belonging. And the way why I say that is, When she has made these plans and she has set aside what house she's going to do this from, my relatives that are taking care of this on her behalf have already set it down that we'll do it from this house, you know. And what happens then is that all the villagers will come together, and you know, they will in their mind say, we need to help. Let's say that you have children out there, you know, you're Hopi, you have children out there, you have daughters, you know, that aren't married, they're, you know, someday they'll get married. So the mothers tell their daughters, you say, you need to help also, you know, you need to help, make some food, take it there, and that will be on behalf of us, because somewhere down the line, when it's your turn, we expect them to help us. Mm-hmm. So the community comes together, and by doing that, that family has paid themselves to this event. They have paid their lives back to them, and in return, when it is her daughters that's doing this, then my niece and our family will say, we need to do it for them also. And that's how community, and that's how this very important task comes to play, and that's how it fixes itself. So again, right there, I'm having an art show here in town right now. I mean, I'm doing a lot of stuff. I'm preparing for another art show next month, and I'm painting, but at the same time, I've got a niece that has been telling me this, and I'm one of her oldest uncles. And I told her, I said, I'll be there, you know. So my sister calls me up and says, Phil, you know, I need some flour, and I need some cake mixes and all this stuff. So can you bring it for me, you know? So I said, okay, next week, Tuesday, I'll go there, I'll dump it off, and then I'll come back, and then I'll go back out Saturday. And when we do this, at the same time, Mary Helen, because she's not from there, since I've met Mary Helen, I have been talking about this. And Mary Helen gets into that frame of mind, because now, as a woman, she also says, I want to help. So I'm going to pay my life back to that also. And we did this for another marriage 2 years ago, I think it was, where we went out there to help. And we took the food from one village to another village. And Mary Helen had taken, made some goodies and taken out there. They mark your name down. It's come to that point where you got to remember these. So the women of that, like tomorrow, I mean, the next week, my relatives that are taking this in charge, you know, taking charge of it, if a woman comes in there saying, this is from us for you, for your wedding here, they actually write the name down, because they have to remember who it was that brought something, you know. Mm-hmm. Because when that time comes back around, they can say, yeah, we need to help them too, you know. Mm-hmm. So it works its way out. And as an uncle, that's part of my spiritual responsibility. Mm-hmm. So the spiritual responsibility works in everything that we do. The kachina ceremonies, the men's ceremonies, the women's, even the baby naming, or all this other stuff, we have to find a way to balance. And when I'm out here, I talk, I do a lot of lectures. And in a way, I consider that also my responsibility to educate non-Hopis. Mm-hmm. Because what I'm doing here is that I want people to understand out here that even in this modern age, with all the technology that we have, you can still live a simple life and not rely too much on the technology, and still go from one day to the other, you know. So that's what I try to do, is I tell, you know, people, I'm not saying that the technology, it is great. I mean, you know, telephones and all this stuff, it's great. But I tell people, we as Hopi, we're the only ones right now that still practice everything that was passed on to us by our ancestors. And so we feel that by doing this, we can make a difference in man's life, you know. So we still conduct these ceremonies, and we live that way throughout the whole year. And so when I'm out here and I'm teaching and I'm doing lectures about Hopi culture, about myself, that to me is my responsibility to educate, you know. And it gives me a sense of peace, and it makes me feel that my life isn't wasted, that I, mm-hmm. that I'm teaching someone, you know. And when I have my paintings there also, I tell them why I paint what I paint, and it gives them a better idea as to what it is I'm trying to pass out to them, you know, because that's spiritual responsibility there, trying to teach. I try to tell people here too that because I live out here, it's balancing living here and living out there, but it's good because I have to say, I have to add this in, is that one of the things I see, people that live out here, you know, they don't really have that kind of advantage like Hopi does right now. We have families that live out here. Life gets a little tough. They say, okay, pack up your bags. Okay, we'll go back to Hopi for a while, get ourselves back together, and then we'll come back and give it another try. People out here can't do that. Life gets tough, they have to stick it out, you know. So I guess in that way, when the ones that are out here, when they do get have that spiritual responsibility, go out home every now and then, they know that when they do go home, because life's tough, people out there will say, well, you know, you've always been here. You know, you just wanted to give it a shot out there, you know. So balance is about the key thing. Mm-hmm. Balance is a key thing to be able to get things done, you know, with what you're doing, what we Hopi are doing here and out there, you know. But I do go out there as much as I can. And the biggest thing is because I'm paying my life. I'm paying for my life. You know, that's the main thing. My mother used to always say, if you're not taking part, go down to the Kachina's resting place, pick up trash, pick up the food that's left out there, and you've given your life back to them. You know, so, and that'll do. And Carla was just talking about something and what she encountered here recently when she was down there. I had something similar to that happen to me recently, and to me it's kind of a spiritual responsibility, I guess, because I do a lot of posing for art workshops, you know, people paint me and stuff. And this lady came from Ohio and did a painting of me. And then she called me back last year and said, Phil, she said, there's some lady in Ohio that bought your painting and said, she doesn't know who you are, but she said that she was drawn to the painting and she just needed to know who you are. And she said, is there any chance that I can give her your contact information? So I said, sure, you know. This woman calls me up, I have no idea who she is, introduces herself, and said, there was a reason why I had to buy that painting, and now I have to meet you. Mm-hmm. And she was telling me how she owns this spiritual house in Ohio called Angel House. And she said that she does something similar like this here, you know, she does stuff like this, a spiritual center. But she said, I really need to meet you. So is there any chance that I can come down to Arizona, to Prescott, and meet you? Because something's telling me I must meet you, mm-hmm. you know. So I said, sure, you know, that would be great. But the week, this was 2 weeks ago, she was supposed to be here April 1st. But so she had called me and wanted to lock everything. And she said, I'm still coming in on April 1st. I said, you can stay at my house. I said, oh, no, I'll stay with Mary Helen, you know, and, you know, that's great. But the very next day I had a call from Ohio and this other lady said, I'm sorry to tell you, but she passed away in her sleep.
Oh, my gosh.
And so it was one of those things where they're telling me this and said, we all know about you here, even though we don't have no idea who you are, but the way she talked about you, it's like she needed to do this mission to see you and bring it back to us. And so we're in Sun City this past weekend. We're waiting for my son because we got lost, so he's going to meet up with us, you know. And another woman calls me from Ohio and says, because of what Carol has taught us about, you know, whatever it is, she said, now there's me and about 3-4 other people that must meet you. So I guess in a way, that's also spiritual responsibility. If they want to make that trip here from Ohio, then I'm going to be here and I'll say, this is who I am. You know, what will that serve? I don't know. Will it do something good for them? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Will it do something good for me? Of course it will. Mm-hmm. And that's how I look at it. Mm-hmm. I don't look at it as a burden. Mm-hmm. I don't look at it as spooky or, I mean, it's weird, you know, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Because I had, when I went out home one time, I had one of my little nieces, we were all eating, And she kept looking at me, you know, and she was staring. And so when she went to go play, I told my auntie, I said, little girl's really watching me. She said, I know, because she said that she thinks there's a little light around your head, you know. You know? And again, she was telling you, there's some good things that you're doing. So to me, when I do these talks out here, and when I go out home and I help out, I'm doing my spiritual responsibility. As a matter of fact, two times now I've been asked to clown. We do, when the Kachina, certain Kachinas dance, they pick men to clown for to keep the people entertained. A lot of men don't like to do it, you know. It's embarrassing and it's kind of like very, especially if you're a shy person. Last year they did that. I said, God, I didn't want to do it, but that spiritual responsibility, I'm doing this not for me, but for my people, for the men that are taking part. And so again, I'm giving them back my life, and I'm getting it back in return. I'm giving myself to them, but my life is going to be brought back to me in a good way. So that's how I see it. That all these things are happening to me. I'm trying my best to balance it out. And I can be a hard person to live with, because Mary Helen knows. Because sometimes I get what do I do? You know, what should I do? Should I go home or should I stay here? But it works out. You know, so
I just love what you're saying about, you know, you're paying your life back. And I don't know, that just speaks to me at a really deep level, because I feel like in a lot of ways people have forgotten that. You know, and that's part of the angst that people hold, you know, the hole that they have in themselves, you know, because that INI, that sacred reciprocity that you're talking about, I think, you know, I mean, that's what keeps things flowing and going. And yeah, so thank you so much.
I don't know what else. One of the biggest things with women out home, they're always busy. And the biggest thing for them is food. They're always cooking. But again, this is something that my grandparents, my mother, my grandmothers used to always tell all of us. Whatever it is that we're doing, especially with the women, the girls, you're cooking and it can be very tiring. But again, it comes back to that. You put this food that's made out of your heart. Mm-hmm. So they say when you're cooking, you're cooking with a good heart. So when people eat it, they're giving you back themselves to you. So you have upped your life. Mm-hmm. You have taken some of their energy, the positive energy, because they're saying, thank you for feeding me. So that is coming back to you, and it's coming back to you, let's say, tenfold, you know. You've just upped your life some more, you know.
The thing that's so beautiful when I've been up there that I've just really taken in is how generous everyone is, you know. Yeah. I mean, you don't even know people, and they're telling you, come in and eat, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's the mantra
I tell people, if you're out there visiting, watching a ceremony, and some family says, come in the house and eat, it's bad manners to not accept. Mm-hmm. Even if you just go in and sit at a table and drink water, you know, that's the right thing to do, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, from that person's side, when he or she accepts, she's getting something back in return, mm-hmm. you know. So. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.